The cyber landscape is constantly evolving, creating new challenges and opportunities to defend against sophisticated attacks. At Northrop Grumman, we provide a wide range of capabilities to stay ahead of these threats. To learn more, visit northropgrumman.com/cyber.
Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report's weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Joining us is Jennifer Wallsmith, the Sector Vice President and General Manager of the Cyber and Intelligence Mission Solutions Division within Northrop Grumman's Mission Systems Sector, our sponsor for this great program. She joined the company in 2016 after 3 decades of service with the National Security Agency. Jennifer, thanks so very much for joining us.
Vago, thank you so much for having me today.
It's an absolute honor and pleasure. And before we get started, I just wanted to note that our daily podcast is sponsored by Bell. Leonardo DRS sponsors our global coverage. Fincantieri Marinette Marine sponsors our coverage of naval warfare. General Atomics Aeronautical Systems sponsors our coverage of strategy. General Motors Defense sponsors our technology coverage. And Rafael Advanced Defense Systems sponsors our coverage of air and missile defense. Jennifer, we've got a new administration in office, and cyber and cybersecurity are seen as the higher priorities than ever before. There's a new national cyber director has been named, your old friend and colleague, Chris Inglis. And you guys have been shaping your portfolio for this moment. Last year, you sold off some of your lower margin businesses to Periton to reshape your portfolio and generate resources to invest in growth. The overall budget's going to be flat, but it's going to be growing, or an expectation is it'll grow in cyber. What's your market outlook, and where are you investing for growth?
Overall, I think we have positioned ourselves well to provide solutions. Solutions that solve our customers' toughest problems. And why do I say that, and why is that so important? As we know, the national defense strategy shifted to great power competition with near peer adversaries. What most people don't focus on is the changes in the types of solutions that our customers are going to need to respond to that. Cyber threat will evolve and change quickly. This is an high-tech, agile undertaking that really challenges even the best of minds. Having comprehensive understanding of both the threats and the changing technology is what I think are essential ingredients to solve those tough problems. And so that's where we are focused, is on building solutions that address those tough challenges with advanced technology, but scalable into solutions. There'll be many solutions that people can provide that give individual elements of relief to the threat. But having a comprehensive solution that is scalable is going to be essential. Yes, indeed, the markets are going to be flat, but cyber is going to be essential for us to continue. It's getting tougher and tougher in our threat landscape. And I think all would say in our national defense strategy that technology must be a key in our defeating of our adversaries.
And you guys are investing in edge computing. You know, walk us through the investment, right? I mean, where are you going to be putting, right? I mean, you got out of the lower margin businesses. Talk to us a little bit about some of the technological capabilities you guys want to build, because at the end of the day, it's a very, very competitive dynamic. And the customer, right, I mean, as you said, right, they want solutions, but they want solutions fast. And they also, it is a price sensitive market as well, right? Talk to us a little bit about where you guys are investing to bring those kind of capabilities on that your national security customer wants.
So our expertise is grounded in signals intelligence and frankly, world-class cyber experience. But what we're going to need is a multifunction environment. Key in that is the technologies of edge sensing, processing, AIML, crypto keys and codes, and things we can't even talk about, but all prepared to operate at the speed of 5G, speed and agility. So our solutions must be architected in such a way that they're scalable and they can continue to evolve with the change of the threat. That's why it's not only our technology discriminators that are so important, but our digital engineering and our knowledge of the mission. That really is what differentiates us, I believe, in our portfolio to provide those more comprehensive solutions. We're going to stay focused on the high threat, threat level 3 and 4, some would say, solutions. That's where a company such as ours is focused. And so in that market, that's one that protecting our weapon systems is just ever so vital. And ensuring that they can operate through the attack, be able to anticipate, adapt, and respond to threats is what's so critical. And that takes world-class systems engineering, in my view.
You spent decades in this business on the intelligence side of things, on the signals side of things, and on the cyber side of the equation. Russia executed an extraordinary SolarWinds intrusion. China's Hafnium unit did the Microsoft intrusion, which may be even worse than the SolarWinds one. They're seen as wake-up calls, but then again, folks said that after OPM and a number of other incidents over the decades, right? I mean, so the good news is we are learning from each one of these. From your standpoint, how is the threat evolving and changing that in turn is driving national strategy, that in turn is driving your strategy?
So the threat is evolving, as General Nakasomi was quoted as saying, is that the threat's more adaptive, the threat is more capable, and the threat is more pervasive. And so in changing all three elements of the threat, it becomes a much broader attack surface for us to be able to respond to. And that is where the scale comes in. So yes, there have been many attacks that are making it more visible to the average citizen on what our adversaries are doing in our space. What we'll need is technology and a commitment to protect our systems through all of that when we are in a peacetime and a wartime footing. Let's hope we don't get to a wartime footing, but we have to be prepared in case we are. And so that's far more significant than just adjusting information or taking information. That actually potentially even demobilizing one of our assets. And that's a much grander scale.
The new administration is looking at cyber as a key element of national infrastructure. And in many respects, that's absolutely the case, right? I mean, every one of our weapon systems is dependent on cyber. We're going to talk about vulnerabilities in a minute, and you even mentioned that, right? I mean, how to do that sort of end-to-end security and not have sort of a subsystems or a hardware vulnerability in a system. What do you think is the, right? What is the ecosystem approach, Jennifer, that we need to secure the nation's national security cyber infrastructure? You know, we have Chinese components across this ecosystem, right? Chinese switches, Chinese computer chips. At the end of the day, right, what's the approach we need to take? And what is the advice maybe you would give your colleagues, Anne Neuberger, who was at NSA, is now over at the White House. Obviously, Chris Inglis was deputy NSA director. He's now the national cyber director. What's the sort of ecosystem approach we need to take? And how does it actually have to maybe encompass commercial as well as national security, right? Because everything at the end of the day is now interlinked, right? There are all sorts of threat vectors here that also come at you from the commercial side of the universe.
The threat, everyone knows, and they would speak to themselves, I would imagine, is going to continue to evolve. And we're not going to be able to scale our way out of that threat with people. People will help us develop solutions to our toughest problems, but it's going to be technology that's going to have to be part of that landscape. Scalable and integrated are two distinct aspects of the problem. And so not everything is going to be able to be protected. Not any system is totally secure. And so you really have to think about what is the critical information that you have to protect? How are you going to operate through the attack and return to a safe state? And what is that critical information and the subsystems, as you described, that are going to get you there? And so I think that's really important back to the engineering of your capability and your solutions is you're not going to protect everything, and it's a risk-based assessment. And as you look at your risk calculus against your engineering of the solution, you have to determine where is your most important information and protect it in a way that is greater than every element in the system.
What is the way to protect the subordinate components, right? I mean, the entire supply chain. The administration is looking at the kind of national investments we need to make in chip making, for example. And thankfully, there is going to be a lot of commercial investment, right? A couple of plants, Intel making a giant investment in Arizona. At the end of the day, we have so many vulnerabilities across even some of our most important weapon systems. You know, I was on a cyber group, and one of the points somebody made is, you know, we take the most advanced fighter and we plug it into a 20-year-old maintenance computer and potentially compromise the security of that system. How do we need to think about all the elements of this? Because I know this is something you guys have been working on. I talked to Greg Potter and Will Metz about this a couple of years ago, right? That each of the services have their own challenges. But at the end of the day, we have a huge infrastructure that's in need of securing. What's the approach you guys are bringing to try to help the customer do that and to do it quickly?
So I think overall, we are continuing to be champions and advocates of understanding the threat and the mission against a technology space that allows us to architect solutions for them in a way that is scalable and adaptable. That's what's so critical in all of it. You know, little piece of history for me is I was the executive at NSA when we started the Trusted Foundry effort with IBM. And so I'm well versed in the microelectronics aspects. And while we focus on trust a lot, access is probably equally important. And so how we determine what elements we must have access to will be really important going forward. And that's part of our global supply chain process that we work at Northrop Grumman. It's a much bigger problem than just Northrop Grumman. And I'm delighted that the administration is taking this head on.
What are the illustrative lessons on how you guys are doing it that could serve as a model for others?
Well, that's a pretty tall order to answer, but I would say take a comprehensive assessment of the really the key performance parameter for cyber. It's been in existence for some time now. GAO has just issued a report on this topic that not many people are complying. OSD DOT&E conducts an quarterly assessment that they send to Congress on their systems, which now includes cyber. But we're not moving quickly enough to embrace the requirements against the pace of the threat. And so to everyone, whether it is my colleagues in other companies or to my government customers, is become grounded in the requirements and ensure our weapon systems are getting those requirements in order to keep them safe.
Let me ask you about CMMC. The last administration launched the Cybersecurity Maturity Model certification process. It was designed to sort of be right a fire inspection approach to this, to try to, or home inspection approach, to try to at least improve cybersecurity across 85% of the environment. And then the last 15%, you know, you can do deeper audits when things get sort of flagged, but you can move quickly and economically to try to do this. This administration is sort of relooking it. We've seen some progress and a lot of folks are weighing into it. You guys are one of the most important companies in the ecosystem, right? You're supported by hundreds and thousands of companies in your own right, right? Talk to us about the right approach as you see it in order for us to get to that virtuous place everybody wants to get to, which is, you know, a safer cyber ecosystem.
So I think the intent of CMMC is very sound, and it's intentional in taking more and more proactive action to secure our infrastructure of our industrial base. You know, we're going to step up as a company and have immediately complied. But I worry about the mid-size and smaller companies that are going to struggle from an affordability standpoint to be able to secure their networks. We remain grounded as a nation on the importance of the diversity of the industrial base, whether that be large, small, disadvantaged, mid-sized companies, but not everyone is going to find it equal in being able to respond to some of these new requirements. And so that is a concern going forward, is how do we bring everybody up to the same level, and one that is not as driven by compliance. I don't have a better answer, Vago, today, but I do believe the intent is right, and I do believe it's a step in the right direction.
And I think everybody is right. I mean, they're working exactly how we manage to do this, especially given that there were questions about the board structure as the administration tries to figure it out. Let me try to bring this full circle. You guys are investing in everything from artificial intelligence to data scientists to edge computing. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, you guys won an important, kind of small, but a really important Air Force contract. Talk to us about the key campaigns you guys are pursuing, because sometimes the most important contracts are not gigantic contracts.
That's an excellent question. You know, in essence, many of my contracts in the cyber and information solutions portfolio are not the largest by any stretch in our company, but they are very informative and they are very important. And the win we just had for the cyber mission platform with the Air Force was just a thrill and a delight, because being the Air Force's provider for their cyber mission platform is what inspires our workforce and allows us to apply our technology to the toughest problems. It is very important that the strategic pieces that we have across the DoD and the intelligence community. The new portfolio that I have is now split 50-50 in the intelligence community and in DoD. It used to be more dominant in software, but as we think about needing software-defined, hardware-enabled solutions, my business is now split to be actually somewhat 50-50 as well. We overall think of our architecture as one of, in a simplistic view, is sensing, effects, and protection. And, you know, sensing in many respects is what we used to think of just collection and maybe processing. But what's happening is at the pace of threat, that sensing must do more than just collection. It must create information so it can then be ready to have an effect. And based on the speed of everything, it is moving closer and closer to the edge. And so those small contracts, such as the Cyber Mission Platform, allow us to tune our tools and know the art of the possible. So in many ways, we actually know the bank vault and we know the bank robber, not only an individual vault, but perhaps a whole banking system of vaults. And right. So it's by knowing both sides of that equation that allow us to bring the best to our nation.
I would be remiss if I didn't give you 30 seconds to talk about the nation's new cyber leadership. How important, I mean, this might sound like a very trite question and kind of an easy giveaway, right? But at the end of the day, it's individuals who drive great things. And this is an extraordinary cyber team. It's not a criticism of Chris Krebs or, and all the fine folks who were working in the last administration and preceding ones. But there is a sense from the very top that this is going to be a national priority. How do you feel that that's going to change the national cyber discussion, the security investment strategy and thinking?
As we know, even if you are a great mind nowadays, you can't do things alone. And you need that fabric or network of individuals that are able to make that heavy lift with you. And it is indeed a heavy lift. But I can't think of a better all-star team that is going to be able to take that on. It is just a unique alignment. I'm certainly biased because I'm honored to be able to call many of those individuals friends. But it is an all-star team. And I'll add another one that might not be as evident, but I believe that Ron Moultrie is going to be nominated as the head of USDI. That's another of your NSA senior executives, former head of the SIGINT directorate.
Right.
And so together, what a team. But we're going to need that team to be able to understand the deep aspect and complicated aspects of the threat, but be able to navigate that way forward with our nation in whether it be resources or policies or approaches. Because there is still a large debate that has to take place about where this is going to sit in our landscape.
And what is, you raised that. So why would there even be a debate about this, right? I mean, isn't it sort of self-evident, Jennifer, right? The importance of everything we do in every part of our lives is affected by cyber, whether it's our refrigerator, our car, or our telephone.
Well, absolutely. And you brought this up earlier about the ubiquitous nature of the integration of our defense industry with our commercial industry. But the question will be is, you know, how do we balance that against our own set of individual priorities? And that, I think, will be one that has to be worked through as we go forward.
Jennifer, thanks so very much for spending so much time with us. It was an absolute pleasure. Look forward to welcoming you back on again in the future. Thanks so very much.
Thank you, Vago.
And joining us now is Dr. Jim Lewis of the Center for Strategic and International Studies, the man who oversees all things cyber at one of the world's great think tanks. Jim, thanks very much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me on the show.
It's always a pleasure. It's a, back to back. You joined us last week for sort of an appraisal on where the administration is. We've got a number of major announcements. Ron Moultrie, obviously going to do intel at the Defense Department. He was the head of signals at the National Security Agency. Chris Inglis, the former deputy director of the National Security Agency and a retired United States Air Force Brigadier General, who was also on the Cyber Solarium Commission and a frequent guest on our show, is going to be the National Cyber Director. Jen Esterly is going to be at the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. And we've also got Ann Neuberger, of course, who is over at the White House. Jim, tell us a little bit about what this team means, because for a lot of people, this is as blue chip a cyber team as you can get. How good are they? And what are the expectations they're going to be able to achieve?
you know, this is the A team. These are probably some of the best people in the country, maybe the best people in the country. So the president's done a great job. And I'm not just saying that, they really are good. And one of the things we've learned is that you need experience, not just in cybersecurity, not just in the technology, but in how to make the trains run in the federal government. So all of these people have held senior positions. I have tremendous expectations for them, because you couldn't pick a better group of people.
For some, the presence of so much national security agency talent, right? Andrew Berger, obviously coming from NSA. Chris spent decades in the organization, was deputy director, and obviously Ron there as well. What is this, right? I mean, is this something that should be a concern or something that's actually an advantage?
Yeah, I think it's an advantage, because what it shows is a willingness to admit that the talent in cybersecurity is largely in NSA. You know, maybe, you know, it's not entirely divorced from intelligence. That's been true for cybersecurity since the start. So they're coming out of the right background. You know, sometimes people say, well, we need more civilian experts. For this field, that's a contradiction in terms, right? You need people who know how the game is played, who know the technology, and know how to make government work. So I think what we've seen is, you know, NSA is the place that graduates the leaders in cybersecurity. And so it was right to harvest them for this mission.
And I should also point out, right, Jen Easterly, right? She too is a West Point grad, served in the United States.
She is also great. And she has the advantage of having worked in the private sector, worked at one of the big banks. So it really is the dream team, but it's also recognition that the place that has the right skills is largely NSA. I mean, DHS will get there eventually, right? But NSA's been in the business for decades. DHS is still the new kid on the block. CISA, when you think about where DHS was 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, it's gotten, and this goes a little bit to thanking Chris Krebs. CISA is pretty strong now, but it could be stronger. Right now, if you look for talent, you'd look at NSA.
Jim, what's next, or rather what has to be next for this administration, right? I mean, talent is great, but what's got to be the agenda? What's next for them?
Well, you've got a couple things. You need to restructure how the federal government does cybersecurity, both the agencies that are responsible, and that means pretty much resurrecting the Michael Daniel organization for coordinating FBI, DHS, NSA, all the agencies that have a major role. That's internal. Coordination will be an immediate challenge because you've got so many strong players. The second thing they need to think about is what does a new cyber strategy look like? And it's not going to be something from the Eisenhower administration. Can we please stop saying deterrence? We're not deterring anybody. So what is the appropriate response to the Russians and the Chinese that will get them to change their behavior? And I know everyone always worries the Russians will be mad at us or will escalate to a bigger conflict. No, they're bluffing us. That's why we need to figure out what is the right response. And Michelle Markoff at State has done some good work, but I think responding to the Russians and then the Chinese is the crucial problem for these guys. The third one is alliance building, right? This is a different kind of game. And there's a role for NATO, there's a role for some of our other major allies, but you're looking at a different kind of alliance structure because you'll have Japan, Australia, the Europeans, the Canadians. Right. You're gonna have a global alliance structure, and that's different from what we have now. So organize the federal government, figure out how to respond to the Russians and the Chinese, not to start a war, but to lead them to change their behavior. And then third, build that alliance we need for cybersecurity. There's other stuff that's important, but those are big enough problems just in and of themselves. We didn't talk about the domestic side. This will fall on CISA and DHS. I think there's some planning to think about supply chain security, to think about how to better work with the private sector, to warn them when things are coming. So that's also a big issue I'd put on the list there, but the big ones are the first three I mentioned.
And you think that for, right, and Jen's going to have a very full agenda as well, but it will involve integrating and coordinating with NSA ultimately at the end of the day.
Yeah, and they've got a pretty good system in place. I mean, NSA accepts that it will be the supporting agency, right? And so I've heard that from senior leaders there repeatedly. That's where Chris brings some real advantages to the table. These are people who've worked together before. So hopefully it'll work out to be a pretty smooth transition, but DHS needs to be able to draw on NSA's strengths, and DHS has to be the interface for the private sector. That's what I hear repeatedly, is people want DHS to take the lead. So a lot of work to do for everybody. Yeah, I don't want to neglect FBI. I think FBI is doing some really cool work in dealing with cyber criminals, in putting the consequences on the Russians and the Chinese when it comes to, with DOJ, when it comes to consequences. So we have a pretty strong team, but they've got to answer some fundamental questions. The most important of which is the relationship with Russia and China, and then move out.
Jim, thanks so much for joining us. It's always an honor and pleasure having you on. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for doing this.
Everyone is a contributor at Northrop Grumman, and every day is an opportunity to help defend our nation and our allies. Visit our careers page at ngc.com to learn about joining the Cyber and Intelligence Mission Solutions team.